Do I need a life coach? You're listening to episode 95 with Rhiannon Bush. Welcome to the Do I Need a Life Coach podcast. We're here to discuss the ins and outs of the life coaching industry and give you tools to use to see for yourself. I'm your host, Rhiannon Bush, mother, management consultant, and a passionate, certified life coach. Well, hello, my friends. How are you? I am sitting at my family's shack, which is in this like top northeast corner of Tasmania. And it's called Musselrow Bay, and it's one of my favorite places in the entire world. It's almost completely off-grid. There is a cell phone tower now, but there never used to be. And it's a dirt road to get here. There are no shops. It's very limited population. And it's just a complete escape from the world. And it just gets me right back into nature. And it's just, it's my happy place. It's my rejuvenating place, my relaxation place, where I can really reconnect with who I am and who I want to be and my hopes and my dreams and my vision for the future. And I get to spend some time just doing some real R&R and some soul searching. So that's where I'm recording from today. And it's been a beautiful day, and I'm currently watching a kangaroo sitting outside of the backyard fence. He's just looking at me really curiously, and I've got these beautiful lovebirds that come and sit on the fence. They're like green and yellow, and then they've got beautiful colors around their face. And I think they're called lovebirds because they actually like travel in pairs. I haven't looked that up, but they're a new addition. I've never noticed them before, except for the past few recent years, and they bring me so much joy. Like, it really is the little things that, you know, I get to stop and take time to appreciate up here, because there's not so much to do and there's not so much to distract me. I can slow right down and take that time to appreciate the little things in my life, like my lovebirds that are sitting on the fence, which is awesome. And today I really want to talk to you about the number of hours you have in the week. Speaking of slowing down, so have you ever looked it up? A girlfriend of mine recently recommended a book to me called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman, which, confession, I haven't read yet. It's on my pile to read, and that pile is getting bigger and bigger. Like, how many books out there exist in the world that are just amazing and so full of knowledge? Like, I'm so grateful to live in the world we live in, where we can really access any information that we want. We can look things up and we can discover things and learn about things. My son, who's almost 5, is fascinated by how things work. Like, he'll say, "Mummy, can I ask Google how plane flies?" And I'm just having to brace myself for the day he says, "Mummy, can I ask Google how babies are made?" I'm going to have to get those parental controls on like ASAP, because he's just so curious about that stuff. And I love it. I love it. I love it. But the number of books out there and available that are written so well and by awesome experts, or people that have really considered what they're writing about and then have the data and the scientific proof sort of to back it up as well, and the experience, is just overwhelming to me. It's awesome and I love it. I said recently to somebody that I'm so sick of living in this world where people say that they can do things that they actually can't, or they don't have the evidence or the experience to back it up. And I understand that experience is a chicken and egg thing. Like, you want to learn about something, you want to do something, you don't have the experience until someone gives you a chance to actually do that thing, which is really difficult to navigate. But I see a lot of people standing up delivering talks on things like leadership, or talks on things that I just stop and I go, but what about all of these other things? And I just think, who are you to stand up there and speak about it? Like, don't speak up there when it's so theoretical. Like, yes, you might have things to discuss about it or thoughts on it, but unless you've actually stood in the shoes and done it and you've got some wisdom to impart because you've done it especially well, I don't really want to hear about it. And that might be a really harsh attitude, but that's just where I'm at. But anyway, this book, 4,000 Weeks, talks about the finite nature of time and the urgency to make the most of it. So 4,000 weeks is the approximate number of weeks in the average human lifespan. And this book is on my list because Berkman challenges traditional productivity advice that often leads to stress, burnout, and always seems to have efficiency at the center of it. So I looked it up on ChatGPT. Thank you, ChatGPT. And the synopsis of this book gives Berkman advocates for embracing the inherent limitations of life and focusing on what truly matters. He explores themes such as acceptance, impermanence, and the pursuit of fulfillment, cultivating a deeper understanding of one's values and priorities, and by aligning actions with personal values and learning to accept the inevitability of uncertainty and imperfection. Individuals can find great satisfaction and purpose in their lives. He aims to help readers reclaim agency over their time and emphasizes the importance of setting boundaries, saying no to unnecessary commitments, and embracing leisure and downtime as essential components of a well-lived life. He encourages navigating the complexities of modern life with intentionality, mindfulness, and a deeper appreciation for the fleeting nature of time. And it's gone probably to my number one book that I'm going to have to read. Because the reason I want to talk about this today is because it's something I've certainly struggled with personally. I've always considered myself a high achiever. I'm always looking forward, and it's never been an issue in my life until recently where I've had to start prioritizing my time in a way I've never had to before. Part of that may be about becoming a mum. Part of that may be just be about where I'm at in life. But in my mid-30s, I've now got enough time under my belt to be able to look back and question whether I spent my past time effectively or whether I spent it wisely, whether the things that I did with that time, whether that set me up well for where I am now, where I'm going next, or whether I wasted it. And, you know, in my 20s, I didn't have that luxury. I mean, yes, I had my teenage years, but I think hormonally and emotionally and intellectually, you're working so much out when you're a teenager. And in your 20s, you really just want to enjoy yourself. And I certainly did. Like, my 20s was amazing. And I followed my heart and I explored where I wanted to go and who I wanted to be. And in my 30s, you know, I started a family, and that was and is still my main priority. So next, in my 40s, I'm hoping to define that as my career generation. You know, that's my career year. That's my time to really start to hone in on where I want to go and how I want to use the last, at that time, 40 years of my life to step in and serve people and have an impact that I know I can have. So it's a really interesting place to be in life. And I know I'm somebody who likes to accomplish things and challenge myself. I'm a doer. A colleague of mine who I love recently described me as a doer. And I do like to tick things off my list and get things done. Very task and outcomes focused. I like to hit my head on the pillow overnight and go, yeah, I smashed today. And by that, I mean run myself ragged. Like, every minute of my day, I'm doing something and I'm achieving stuff, whether it's cooking sourdough or whether it's being with my kids or whether it's being at work and finishing that off really well or whether it's exercising. You know, there's so much to do and there's so much I want to do every single day of my life. But I'm also super connection focused. Damien and I, we were swimming around at Little Muster Row recently, and he said to me, he'd met a woman walking along the beach. She was on her own and he'd obviously spoken to her. She had driven out here from Western Australia and was sleeping in her car and just going around on her own. So, like, you can imagine this, right? We're in this crystal blue, perfectly clean paradise water. And he looks at me and he goes, you would have done that. And I'm like, oh, would I? And I had to stop and think about it, because I thought when I moved to London 2013, 2014, that I would have been happy to travel on my own. That was my intention. I was going to just go and I was going to see where the world took me and take photos of things. And that was going to be my life, going to be a bit of a nomad. And I thought that I'd be happy doing that, because I did love my own company until I had far too much of it. And when I had far too much of it, I realized what matters to me, which is tying into the values and priorities for me personally, as Berkman talks about. And I have known for a long time now, and since meeting Damien, that I love adventure and I love adversity and I love new and refreshing things in my life. But who I do that with and the people element of it is the most significant part of it for me. So if I'm traveling around Italy, I want to taste the food and understand the history with people that I know and can talk about it with years later. I want to get to know the culture and how that the history of that country has shaped the culture. And that was especially true when I went to Berlin. So I traveled to Berlin on my own, and Germany has an incredibly rich history and a very traumatic history. And to understand the way those events have shaped the culture it has now is fascinating to me. But the emotional journey I went on when I was traveling around the Reichstag and Sachsenhausen and other significant places, I had nobody to share that with. I mean, sure, yes, I met people while I traveled and we had a laugh and had a drink and a good time, but it wasn't long-term and meaningful for me. So it's like, you know, I went to Attica, which was a really fortunate thing, and it's a very renowned restaurant in Victoria, and my significant other wasn't with me, and he's a chef, right? So it was really hard for me not to take him as well and to even go without him, and I embraced it and I loved it and it was fantastic. And there's one of those people who was actually one that invited me there. Him and I are still close and we talk about it and it was awesome, but there was something missing from that because Damien wasn't the one with me. It's not like 10 years from now I can turn around and say, oh, you remember that night at Attica and how we ate ants and they tasted delicious? And, you know, I love that. You know, one of my best girlfriends, Grace, I just love that we can rehash all the good times and the old memories that we have, and I felt and still feel so connected to her based on the experiences that we've shared and those memories and the things that I experience with people, and that's what gives me that connectedness, and it enables me to have this, you know, seemingly important relationship to me. If I didn't have those things, I'm not sure I would feel as connected. So growing older has really helped me narrow down what matters to me and how to prioritize my time. And the answer, for those of you who were wondering from earlier, is 168 hours. That's all we have in 1 week. And I think as I say this, I've actually broken down this maths in another episode before. But I think it helps to understand how you're spending your time. When I did that maths, it was through the lens of being more productive and efficient, which if you're a doer like me, will be very helpful. And in light of Berkman's book, there's also a need to have scheduled downtime where you can be present and you can rest and not necessarily be active in your mind or your body. And the reason this is important is because going full tilt towards your goals and dreams, or even just living life the way that we in society have to today just to survive, it will lead to burnout and stress. And in the long term, that is going to equate to living less than 4,000 weeks, which is the average in our lifetime. I had to learn how to find time to switch off, because I felt like as soon as I had time, any time at all, I had to schedule something in that was important and meaningful and moving me closer to where I wanted to be. You know, I had to hustle to make it count. And I felt guilty when I would sit down and watch shows on television or not do something productive with my time or read anything that wasn't a nonfiction book, you know, where I didn't need to achieve anything. When I didn't do that, it felt wasted. It felt like I was sacrificing my bigger picture for nothing. I didn't equate that time to any value added. I couldn't sort of get that time back. But what that eventually led to was me wasting more time and more because I was so strung out and I was becoming so burnt out and I was using any excuse to run away and escape. And for me, that looked like trashy novels over and over again, repeatedly, or series on Netflix, or not sleeping and not going on walks that sparked my creativity, or not getting massages that helped my body feel more comfortable. You know, it really was truly wasting it. But if you've got 168 hours in your week and you know you've got time in those 168 hours where you are doing things that move you closer towards your goals and your dreams, and you're focusing on other areas of your life that you value and you are choosing to prioritize, then you can find time to have downtime as well, where you can be present and you can relax and you can do all of it without feeling guilty, especially when it's scheduled. And I know, I get it. It seems like those couples that schedule their sex because, you know, they don't have enough time in their week, but they have to actually lock it in. But you know what? It works. And the reason it works is because mentally you can stop and be in the moment and do the thing while not feeling like you've got to do it at another time or that something is going to be sacrificed because of it. It's like, I'm doing this right now. This is my focus. This is what this time has been allocated towards. And I know everything else is going to happen because it's scheduled. I know that sounds so prescriptive and really unsexy and lacking spontaneity, but it works for this reason. You can be present because it's like, right, for the next 2 hours, this is what I'm doing. And then come 7 o'clock tonight, I'll get my downtime or my me time or whatever time you need. And then when you have that downtime, what that means is instead of sitting there going through your to-do list in your head, you can relax and be present and be mindful because you know your to-do list has you covered. It has everything in it that you know you need to get done. And therefore, you can forget about it because you know time has been allocated and you can remain in the moment and be present right where you are right now. A long time ago, I instated a new rule for myself where I didn't talk about Monday until at least 6 p.m. on the Sunday night Why? Because I would get into Monday mode on Sunday morning. I would start packing my bags. I would start choosing my outfits. I would start reading my emails and writing in my diary what I had to do for that week. And then I was stressed out and crabby, and the whole family suffered because I was an emotional stress ball already going into work mode, and there was an entire day, 50% of my weekend, available for me to still enjoy. And it got to a point where I remember thinking, this is ridiculous. So I told everyone I was not talking about or planning or doing anything to do with starting my week until at least 6 p.m. on the Sunday night before. And that really worked for me and for the family because I was just so much more happy and relaxed and joyful on my Sundays all day. And you can only imagine what kind of role I was in at that time. It was like corporate and it was, you know, pound of flesh for the money I was earning. And it was just, you know, I enjoyed it, but it was that case of trading what felt like so much of myself for my role, because it wasn't just my weekends that, you know, I had to work or I had off, or, you know, it was a lot. It was a lot. You know, there's an expression to everything that I've just said, and it's something like don't give up tonight for tomorrow or something like that. And it's a really good expression because it's true. So knowing your 168 hours, it's a really great exercise to understand how you're spending your time. And when you do, instead of planning it or scheduling it, you take some time to appreciate that with that time, you can do anything you like. I've never been a super active person. I mean, I'm active, but incidentally. So I'm not somebody that, you know, gets on their road bike and rides 30 kilometers one way to and from work and then goes to the gym and then rides home and then goes for a run. But I realize there's actually very little of my time that's spent being cardiovascular energy active. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not huffy puffy active. And the less I do, the less I want to do. And the opposite of that is true as well. So it really depends on what you're prioritizing in your life at whatever time as to what you choose to do with your 168 hours. Sometimes it's just taking it slow, slowing down. And that reminder that, you know, when you do that, you can actually do anything with that time. Absolutely anything. You can do a pottery class, or you can go and sleep, or you can socialize, or you can work. And depending on where you're at in your life depends on what you choose to prioritize. I've been reading this amazing book by MJ DeMarco, and he talks about dedicating yourself to something for 4 to 5 years to set yourself up to then live a life you want to live. It's brilliant. And you can do that too. The priorities you have now may not be the priorities you have in a year, 3 years, 10 years, or, you know, they might be. At the end of the day, you can break down your time as in 168 hours in your week, or you can do it for the month or the quarter or 6 months or the year. I like to do it weekly because my weeks are so different. One week I'm working, another week I'm not. I have clients, I have marketing summits, I have a whole bunch of different things going on. So I find a week works for me really well. And then if I can look at it, zoom out and look at it, I can then go, okay, more of my weeks have been spent doing this than that. So maybe I need to recalibrate that a little bit, or I can adjust it based on that level. But you've got to find what works for you. It might be daily, it might be weekly, it might be quarterly, whatever, but just make it work for you, because understanding what matters to you and what is meaningful to you will enable you to get your fix of the things that fuel you and energize you and revitalize you. And when you pair that with where you're going and what you want, you will be able to find an amazing balance of time each week where you are working towards where you want to be tomorrow, but also living in the moment for today in a way that is calm and rejuvenating and relaxing, so you can get the best of your work time and you can also get the best of every single day to enjoy your life as you live it right now. I'm going to go and read 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. I will see you next week. Thank you so much for joining me on this insightful journey today. If you've resonated with what we've discussed and feel inspired to make positive changes in your life, I'm here to support you. Remember, your transformation begins with a single step. If you're ready to take that step and explore the possibilities of working with a life coach, visit my website at www.rhiannonbush.com. There, you'll find more information about my coaching programs and how we can collaborate to achieve your goals. Your journey to a more fulfilling life starts now, so reach out today and let's create the life you dream about. Until next time, take care and keep moving forward.